Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Report Lockdown Edition. Most of you might already know if you've been watching live, but Brett's here. Hey, Brett, how's it going?
Oh, my God, it's so good. Thank you to the person who commented, butt ear lick. Not the worst.
They burned you, man. I don't know how you come back from that.
Yeah, I'm surprised it took so long into my life. I bet I was 22 before my friend Brad called me ear lick my nuts.
Jeez. Morning, and it's stuck everybody. Ever since. So by the way, I love that people are like, we can only hear you. No, I know.
My wife came in and was like, guys, we can hear you. Your mics are hot. I was like, this is a bit, babe.
Yeah.
I never call her babe. I've only called her babe, by the way, during coronavirus Skypes.
Yeah. And why is that?
Zoom hangouts. I don't know.
Okay, well, that's weird. It's a symptom. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We've got more bits for you, some of them even news-related. Through the course of this hour, we are going to be talking about the Captain Crozier, who was dismissed from his command. We've got a couple of different doctors who've been going on Fox News and sort of forcing them to confront inconvenient truths. So that should be fun. We've got positive dog news, as well as one of the cutest videos of old people I've seen in quite some time, and the garbage people of the week, as well as a story that we have been punting every day this week. Hopefully we'll get to it. I don't even want to say what it is because I'm a little bit worried we might have to punt it again.
I just want to tease. You're going to hate where I first saw that happy story that we're going to do later on about the game people are playing. You're going to hate where I saw that first.
Oh no.
I'm just going to make you feel like that person.
Oh no.
So sit tight.
I have a prediction. We'll see.
Ooh. Okay. All right.
We'll see here.
In addition, I do want to say Happy Half Hour is going to air for members and on the TYT live stream today. And it's a viral video film school takeover again. This is crazy online communities. You're going to see a throwback episode I did probably 8 years ago when Obama made it slightly harder for people to buy dipping tobacco, chewing tobacco.
Huh.
And it's one of my favorite episodes I ever did in my life. It's a lot of people saying, "I heard Obama," with like dip. Obviously it hasn't affected their ability to get it. So good.
Oh my God. Kimberly, thank you for your one up that you've given us on Super Chat. And Dave says, "Yay, the terrible twins." By the way, earlier this week, JR was on and we did straight on and side shots to track the progress of our quarantine beards. And Brett's doing really well. So I've already seen one person who said, "Brett beard is better than yours, John. Sorry, dude." Which I hadn't said anything yet. Why did you have to say that at all? And then Mama Alaska says, "Poor Johnny Pie needs to shave his cheeks. That beard is looking awful. Rug is going to grow up to underneath your eyeballs."
I love it.
Okay, I'll trim down a little bit, but I don't think.
Oh, you did? See, I don't do that.
I'm not even growing it yet. Everybody relax.
Wife appeared with scissors when I was sitting in this chair and was just like, "Stick your lip out." And just like, something was bothering her.
Uh-huh.
Also, the problem is it's not out and down, which I think is its own problem. Right now, it's just straight out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. JR's got some tips on that. His is growing in pretty well. Okay, with that, everybody, please hit the like button if you haven't already done so. I would like to see that if we can get a record on likes on one of our live shows. And Miss Callie says, "Sexy hot Friday sandwich." Is that both of us?
Who's the meat? Brett's the bread.
I don't want to know. This is a news thing. Anyway.
I like your beard a lot.
Thank you. I think yours is looking very thick and academic almost. Like I can imagine a professor having your beard.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's all the beard talk we have for now because we got a lot of stories we got to get to. So why don't we jump right into that? In news that I find incredibly frustrating, Captain Brett Crozier, who commands the Roosevelt, an aircraft carrier with a crew of nearly 5,000, was relieved of his command on Thursday, but he will keep his rank and remain in the Navy. If this story is totally new to you, you might wonder, why is this frustrating and why did he lose his command? Well, there's a reason, and it's related to coronavirus. So the ship, which was operating in the Pacific, pulled into port in Guam last week, several days after multiple crew members tested positive for the virus. By Wednesday, there were 93 positive test results, and more than 1,000 people were taken off the carrier and placed into isolation. So at that point, Captain Brett Crozier wanted to sound the alarm because he felt like his soldiers were that they weren't being helped out by the federal government. It wasn't being taken seriously. And the likely outcome of this would be that more people would become infected and he would potentially begin to lose soldiers. And so at that time, he sort of sounded the call for help in a letter. I'm just going to read you a couple of little excerpts from it. There is quite a bit if you'd like to find the full four-page letter. He said at the time, "This will require a political solution, but it is the right thing to do. We are not at war. Sailors do not need to die. If we do not act now, we are failing to properly take care of our most trusted asset, our sailors. The spread of the disease is ongoing and accelerating." He asked for compliant quarantine rooms on shore in Guam for his entire crew as soon as possible. And he also said, "Removing the majority of personnel from a deployed U.S. nuclear aircraft carrier and isolating them for 2 weeks may seem like an extraordinary measure. This is a necessary risk." And when he says that, he means that because the risk is that he will start to lose sailors. And we find out now he is kaput. So, Brett, we're going to have a little bit more details on that. I didn't see this story going in that direction.
Kaput. By kaput, I mean...
career-wise.
Career-wise.
He's alive. Wait.
He's alive. His career is not necessarily kaput. He was not, from what I saw, he was not demoted or anything. He was just
brought.
He lost his command. So he eventually may be reassigned. But it's just one of those things that's very, very frustrating. And I know that the people in charge are saying things like, he's a really great guy, really like him, I know he was just looking out for his sailors, but we have to remove him for not going through the chain of command. There's a couple possible reads on that. One is potentially that the person in charge of the Navy did not want to do this and was willing to just kind of, you know, respond because, you know, in the movies about this, they do end up demoting whoever does it, maybe, but the audience really wants that person to get the medal and be rewarded. And it's strange that this guy was sent off his ship when his job is to keep his soldiers and do a job that involves protecting his soldiers. And he did that. And he's now losing his job for it.
Exactly. And I saw in like stories that have been tweeted out about this, I saw presumably Trump supporters attacking him for like losing his mind. Why is he freaking out? Are you supposed to go with the chain of command? Like, do any of them, absent the fact that he was being critical, not even directly of Trump, but being critical sort of the response, like the idea that they in normal times would be attacking like a commanding officer for advocating for the lives of members of the U.S. armed forces, like that, man, they can be twisted into very weird positions.
You know, in this time where we're trying to figure out like technological solutions for problems that we have trying to broadcast our shows, there's always the default settings that you have to override. Mm-hmm. And everyone's default setting in this who supports Trump is just keep supporting Trump. Whatever the situation, whatever is happening doesn't really matter. Me being consistent in my logic and advocacy for policy doesn't matter. It's just support Trump at all costs, which exposes all of their shortcomings as Trump's own policy angles change and his treatment of the crisis changes over time. They end up contradicting themselves instead of saying, listen, we should be looking out for everyone in America and people who aren't doing that, we should revile. Instead, it exposes that when Trump is looking out for everyone in America, we like it. When he's not looking out for people in America, we like it. Whenever anyone points out his inconsistencies, we hate them. So we're being consistent.
Yes. By the way, I'm seeing in the chat that people are taking issue with the fact that we'd refer to them as soldiers as opposed to sailors. There was no disrespect intended in that. The entire reason that we're doing this story at all is because we care about their lives and we care about commanding officers of theirs who are advocating for their lives to not be not receive any sort of strike back for that. Now, really fast, before we get into a little bit more of what Brett was alluding to, I do want to play one interesting turn that this has taken. So apparently, as the captain was departing the vessel, here's video of what was happening. Okay, so look, I don't know what percentage of the entire crew that is, but clearly a very significant number of the people whose lives he was trying to save are not happy to see him go. And,
No.
And I think that's important that people. What's that? No,
that was a mutiny, John. That was a fiery, angry mutiny of sailors who couldn't handle this man. That's why they were clapping.
Exactly.
Clapping out the demon that had possessed the ship.
Yeah.
They wanted him off.
Yeah, and by the way, some of the things I was saying about the Trump supporters who were attacking him was in response to that video. So, like, in response to a video that demonstrates that the soldiers do not appear to believe that this was a good move on the part of, the sailors, who do not believe that this was a good move on the part of the Navy, like, to say, no, I know better. He sucks. He was horrible. He was traitorous. That's a really weird position. But again, when you have one person who you are loyal to when it's Donald Trump, all of these other groups and individuals that you supposedly had reverence for before, supporting the troops and stuff like that, that's just gone. That's all contingent. It's contingent on them being supportive of Donald Trump in his eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of when they went after the Gold Star father for basically, you know, back during the campaign. So that ship sailed, the metaphor, a long time ago.
Exactly. Exactly. And by the way, the acting secretary of the Navy, I just want to read one or two of these quotes. So praised Crozier, but said he had concluded that the captain, quote, allowed the complexity of the challenge of the COVID breakout on the ship to overwhelm his ability to act professionally. Wow. He says, I have no doubt in my mind that Crozier did what he thought was in the best interest of the safety and well-being of his crew. Unfortunately, he did the opposite. It unnecessarily raised the alarm of the families of our sailors and Marines with no plans to address those concerns. He says the decision was his alone.
Sure it was.
I don't think that's true.
But he was unnecessarily raised the alarm of the families of our sailors is a ridiculous way to put it. Without a plan of action in place. Well, he couldn't get a plan of action from you, and so that's why he raised the alarm.
Yeah.
Because meanwhile, 100 sailors were getting sick from this, confirmed.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, for those people who were attacking him, like, you remember supposedly what they were so frustrated about when it comes to Benghazi, which was, like, our people are there, they're in danger, and the people who were supposed to safeguard them didn't take it seriously, and that's why lives were lost. And so a few lives were lost there. And now it's like, this guy's unnecessarily freaking out because some sailors might die. Like, man, we've come a long way in just a few years.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Fox News is in the second or third version of their coverage of the coronavirus, and they are still very much defensive of Donald Trump and his government's response, which is why it is awesome when they bring on guests, experts, doctors, who are willing and able to, at least in this one appearance they'll get, because there might not be future ones, reveal some inconvenient truths to the Fox News audience. Here is Dr. Rishi Desai, recently on Fox News.
Here every night is that the test, that there are millions of tests available. And yet we don't have that pinprick blood test that you can just sort of get, you know, at your local doctor and know in 15 minutes. But they're working on it.
Yeah, they're working on it. They should have been working on it for months. So the fact is, we knew about this from the WHO when? December 31st, 2019. So last year, we knew about this. We knew coronavirus is coming. We knew it was a respiratory disease. We knew it was person-to-person. Why is it that it's this week that the FDA finally approved these kind of new Abbott lab testing, which, by the way, is one test at a time? It's a great test, but it's one test at a time. It's different than the labs that are doing mass testing, right? So this is a wonderful test, don't get me wrong, but it's one test per 15 minutes. That's wonderful, but it's not the same volume that you really need. This is better for kind of outpatient clinics and things like that. We needed this months ago. You look at Korea, South Korea and the U.S. had their first official confirmed case on the same date, January 19th. Mm-hmm. That means since January 19th, you look at what South Korea did and what we did. Their population is 1/6 of ours. Look at the cases they have. Look at the mortality they have. It's a trifle compared to what we're dealing with right now because we've had a very weak response and they had a really strong response. Mm-hmm.
Doctor, thank you. Very interesting to talk to you, Dr. Desai. Hope you'll come back.
Okay, so a lot of people I saw in responding to that were saying that her, like, pause where he stopped talking, she was like, was her listening to someone who's probably saying dump out. Now, as a person who gets in the ear of people who are on camera, Brett, what do you think was happening there?
Oh, absolutely that. Also in the back of her mind was like, we thought that you would be an easy interview because there's cartoon germs behind you. I thought this would be... Mm-hmm. Much like our coverage has been cartoonish, mm-hmm. we thought we would get some very simple responses to you. Maybe it's like a boing at the end. But no, you were pointing out the shortcomings of the man whose sails we are meant to blow wind into.
Exactly. And in multiple different areas. So in one, she starts off saying, you know, we hear all the time, there's tons of tests. Everybody's got tests. No, that's not what we're hearing. Governors or some, the Montana governor recently was saying, no, we're gonna run out very soon. So that's a very important myth for this doctor to immediately bust, but then also to try to get people to be realistic about what these new advances and tests are going to be able to accomplish in a very short time. That there are some that might be faster, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they can process an infinite number simultaneously. And then to put it in the context of, you know, how we compare to South Korea in this, that sure, they are a smaller country. We should acknowledge that. Although let's also acknowledge that Seoul does not have 38 million people, as Trump said earlier this week, but that they have been far more successful in no small part because they didn't drag their heels and they took it seriously from the very beginning. Whereas here in America, we still have states that are not on lockdown. There's not going to be any sort of federal lockdown, even though Dr. Fauci today said that he thinks there should be. I think that that's more likely to result in him no longer being brought onto the news than it does a national lockdown being instituted by Donald Trump.
It's just that the short-sightedness of everyone in the Trump administration is they don't want to create an instant lockdown so that it ruins the economy in very obvious ways. But after that, they don't realize that they're slowing the rate at which we are allowing this to grow. So it grows faster and faster, which will lead to an eventual total lockdown, which will then cripple the economy after a longer time of dragging your feet. So rather than just do it fast, do it effectively, and do it in a way where you have to have faith that people will understand you're acting in their best interest, even though it is kind of a tougher in the short term thing to endure.
Yeah.
Instead, they end up leading to the same total lockdown, which will happen down the road, which will end up having created a longer window during which we're kind of ruining the economy because we have to.
Yeah. And unnecessarily losing more lives along the way. You know, like 1,000 a day at this point.
Right. But like Tucker yesterday was talking about going back to Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor of wherever it was. And when he did that, he went back and said, listen, we should have done this a completely different way. It is mean for people to go after folks like that. And he's just being a douche.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, I saw someone in the comments just said, you know, it's great that Fox was willing to air that. Well, like, they aired him there.
They can't.
We'll see if they have him on again.
It'd be amazing if they just put up like technical difficulties with like someone in a broom, like some kind of bossa nova going on in the background.
I mean, they basically did as close as they could. By the way, that doctor, Rishi Desai, he said as of yesterday that he believes that he had coronavirus, that he experienced many of the symptoms, including a really bad fever. So just bear that in mind, too.
Right. But that's another thing. And they want to have it both ways. They want to say that they want to keep the total infection numbers down, so they're not testing everyone. But they also want to say that it's a much lower mortality rate than anyone gives it credit for. But they can't prove that because they're not testing people.
Exactly.
And they try to have it both ways.
Exactly. And so that was one doctor. We do have another doctor for you. So Nicole Saphir, who I believe I have not always really loved her appearances on Fox News. But anyway, she was on with Fox and Friends. I believe this is this morning. And effectively, the Fox and Friends gang was saying that all these red states that haven't done lockdowns, of course they shouldn't. They want to protect their economy and it's not that bad there. Well, she popped that inconvenient belief as well.
I don't want the president to have to come out and do a mandatory stay at home over across the entire nation, but I do implore the governors to take responsibility for their states. They know their citizens and they know what needs to be done. We still have hotspots in states that are rapidly increasing cases faster than they would expect. Everyone thinks that New York City is the hotspot and that's the only one that's going to be, but that's not true. Anywhere can be like New York City we're seeing right now. They're just a few weeks behind.
Yep. Yeah, so some of the governors that haven't done it yet, Kay Ivey, the Republican governor in Alabama, she said, "I put down a marker last week affirming that we are not having an order to stay in place. We are not Louisiana. We are not New York State. We are not California. In Missouri, their governor, Parson, says he was not inclined to make a blanket policy. Well, Louisiana is bad, but Alabama isn't. So, and Missouri says we're not going
to
make a blanket policy.
Alabama's starting to have increasing cases, too. Yeah, right. I know, I agree that each state needs to do what's best for their state. However, you're starting to see those cases increase, and what's happening in Louisiana is going to happen in Alabama, too.
What?
Yeah, he didn't really know what to say to that. He felt like, well, the governors are saying that they're fine right now, and for some reason, we're supposed to be against these lockdowns. Like, I don't even think these Fox hosts know why that's the position they're supposed to have, except that Donald Trump doesn't want a national lockdown. So they have to pretend that that's a wise thing to do, even though the experts that they themselves are bringing on, and that's not the first time that she's been on there. They bring her on pretty regularly. She's saying, yes, Bozo, I'm trying to get through to you. It's not as bad right now, but the fact that they're not locking it down is what is going to lead to it being as bad as it is in Louisiana or in these other states. The red states are not immune to this.
And the rate of infection in Alabama, it was reported, is at a higher clip than in California. So when Kay Ivey is proudly claiming that they're not California and New York, specifically claiming they're not California, she kind of wishes, because everything that they're doing is annoying. But that's the theme, man. The theme is people wanting, like, trying to wish things into existence. And that's how religion works. And that's how Trump has played everything since he was born, really. Just using this marketing campaign to accomplish results that are beneficial to him. But you can't market your way out of a virus. You can't change the facts on the ground. You can't change the science behind the climate change to benefit you. But the benefit that they have of the nature of climate change is it's happening at a slow enough clip where they can they're not affected by it materially. This is just an expedited version of that, where Trump is so anti-science and science doesn't give a crap.
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers now that you were bringing up. And look, Louisiana's hard hit. Like, they might pass California today in total numbers of infections. It looks like they're at over 10,000 now.
But that's the stuff. It's like, if we did this quickly, Louisiana had Mardi Gras, right? Their spring break is happening now. And there are reports of people who, there were 44, or there was a plane full of folks who went to Mexico and they weren't supposed to, from UT Austin, your alma mater, and one of them. And they weren't supposed to go. And then when they came back,
got coronavirus.
100 of them got coronavirus. And a lot of them are apologetic, but it's tough. It's tough to be the Chicken Little saying, like, listen, the world is on fire. You need to do something about it. When you're right. I saw someone tweeted an amazing little thing. It's like, every disaster movie starts with the government ignoring a scientist.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It usually doesn't end that well. The nation and most of the people in it rightfully focused on the pandemic, but while that's going on, the government is making moves behind the scenes in other areas, and they're pretty important. For instance, if you care about the environment, the EPA has announced a freeze on enforcing environmental regulations due to the coronavirus pandemic. The EPA says it does, quote, not expect to seek penalties for violations of routine compliance monitoring, integrity testing, sampling, scientific blah blah blah, and all of that, where the EPA agrees that COVID-19 was the cause of the non-compliance. And so, Brett, effectively, they're mostly just going to sort of let things go as long as it has some sort of tie to coronavirus. Now, really fast, the issue with that, factories, power plants, and other major polluters have tremendous discretion in deciding whether or not they think the coronavirus will prevent them from meeting legal requirements on air and water pollution and hazardous waste management. The EPA will not be fining companies for violating certain requirements on limiting pollution during this time. So if you are polluting, and if you think it's related to coronavirus, or if you can make the case that it's related to coronavirus, and if that case is convincing to the EPA, sorry, the EPA under Donald Trump, then why would you not do that? Obviously, you're going to try to do that.
The same way that Rudy Giuliani was made fun of for saying something, something, 9/11. I believe it was a episode of Family Guy where someone really realized that they could just get points in a debate. I think it was... she could get points in debate by saying 9/11. That's what's happening now. Everybody's saying like something, something coronavirus. And that's why I can't enforce my environmental standards. It's like, what? Aren't these just settings on that you set? Yeah. Isn't this just like, instead of dumping it in the river, you do the thing that we've forced you to do through good regulations. That's what everybody's doing at this point. And like I said before, Mitch McConnell trying to get allowances so he could sell Kentucky sunscreen and at a fast track approval pace. Like, why? Because coronavirus, do you feel the need to do this? It's because they just have always wanted to, and there's a distraction. There's some kind of impetus. And the most frustrating thing about it is, the one thing we should be advocating for in this situation is Medicare for All, because that's the one solution that would actually alleviate a lot of the fallout, the second and third like level removed disaster of people losing their jobs, is to have universal health care. This is the time to do that, but everyone gets mad at you for some reason when you point out those specifics. And in the meantime, they're like, oh, I guess EPA can't enforce these restrictions because coronavirus. I don't know, not that big a deal. Let's just keep it going and move on.
Yeah, and you brought up some great examples of how specific it can become, like with Kentucky. So we have a bit more of that. Hours after the EPA announcement, the U.S. Department of Agriculture confirmed a waiver allowing a private company to take over inspection duties at a Tyson Foods beef slaughterhouse. By Friday morning, news broke that the administration was close to finalizing its plan to roll back Obama-era rules raising fuel economy standards on new vehicles, resuming a fight that delighted the oil industry, divided automakers, and revealed a double standard on states' rights as the White House sought to bring California to its knees. And by midday, the administration published a final review of a proposed 211-mile road that would cut through a portion of Alaska's Gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve and open up an area rich in copper, zinc, and other minerals. So just...
What does this have to do with coronavirus?
Nothing.
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 It has absolutely nothing to do with coronavirus. I mean, the oil companies are meeting with Trump. Why? To get a handout. That's all it is. It's like, now is a time when people have other things to deal with, and they're making all these changes. This is the black swan moment. This always happens. It's like when you look at giant changes that happen to industries. It sadly usually boils back down to something like this: gridlock, or someone takes advantage of some kind of administrative loophole and changes things forever. But in this situation, is there any way that we can stop Trump from rolling back fuel standards? Like, what? And the Tyson chicken example, it's not like because of coronavirus, no one's going in there to check the beef. It's just they gave it to a private company. The mm-hmm. same way that they've been rolling back inspections of food quality, they're like, here's now a time to do it. I'm just going to say coronavirus, see if anybody notices. Yeah. We have to notice. I just don't know what anyone can do right now. And they know that.
I hope that private company is as rigorous in evaluating Tyson Foods as the government would be. No, of course it's not going to be. We all understand that. So what we're seeing is, in all of these examples that you've given, that I'm given, it is that in these times of emergency, people without power and resources suffer, and those who were already well off will make far more money under these situations. Like, the senators are going to be making tons of money. Like, more came out about Kelly Loeffler today. Steve Mnuchin is going to be literally handing out billions and billions and billions of dollars, and he will definitely be using the information he has based on that to be personally profiting, and anyone he chooses to will personally profit. Corporations are going to be handed money, and regulations are going to be taken off of them. This is a crisis for many people. It is not a crisis for everyone. It is an opportunity for a lot of people. It is like the Littlefinger political philosophy is playing out in real time. That's what we're talking about here.
Chaos is a ladder. And then also, just to put a little bow on that, they can give all this money out to corporations, but if you haven't filed your taxes with auto pay, then it's going to take you 5 months to get $1,200.
Uh-huh. It's going to take so long.
Like, we can't do that right now. But in the meantime, just go ahead and make, I don't know, more polluting cars. And here, Tyson, your inspectors, here's a no-bid contract.
Lots of people have been saying the show has been too serious, too dark, too depressing. Well, okay, can you maintain that criticism after seeing this?
Those are the self-quarantined residents at a senior center in Wales. And guess what? They're playing the popular Hasbro game. You may remember it, Hungry Hungry Hippos, in real life.
So, as the Today host said, they're playing the Hasbro game. I mean, sort of. But a bunch of seniors in a community housing place like that, like, acting out, like, huge-scale Hungry Hungry Hippos, that just looks like fun even without a pandemic, you know?
Yeah. I just don't believe... I can't believe the Chiron didn't say Hungry Hungry Hip Replacement. That's all.
That would be the lower third on the main show. I think positive.
In the dead of night, couldn't sleep, and so I went on Ivanka Trump's Instagram, John, and saw that. Ivanka Trump was the location that I teased earlier where I first saw this. Was that your guess?
No.
Who did you think it was?
I'm not going to say who I thought it was, but I will say I was worried it might have been, like, if it was, like, Tucker Carlson wanted to show something positive, that would have killed me. I don't mind it being on Ivanka so much.
I'm editing a video currently that I keep giving up on at night, but it's just a nice little tour through Ivanka Trump's Instagram that everybody should watch for. Mm-hmm. It is not all Hungry Hungry Hip Replacement. It's a lot of terrifying photos of her husband. Yes, that's great. It's great to see people in lockdown inventing new awesome games. I want to meet the person who invented that specific one. And just shake their hand while wearing gloves.
You might be able to do that, because according to a representative for this facility, the Lifestyles team here at Bryn Celine are always coming up with fun and exciting ways to keep the residents entertained. This activity really raised morale in the home and had all of the relatives and team members laughing. It's not impossible that you could maybe get one of those Lifestyles team members.
Yep.
That'd be fun.
It's weird, though, I don't know. I see, that's the difference between like my show and John Krasinski's show, is that mine, I can't bring myself to be genuinely happy about certain things. Like, there's ridiculous things that I love. This one isn't even that, because I just like, why don't they just play Hungry Hungry Hippo?
Because this is bigger and more fun.
Because why now, why do people make grandma a hippo? We can make grandma a hippopotamus. She's like the game piece here.
Man, the host of Happy Half Hour is Buzz Killington today. why do you sit in your chair and have people push you down a hallway? Why not just close your eyes and imagine it? Because it's fun and bigger things are fun. That's why big chess is so much more fun than little chess, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this thank you, Brinsland.
More fun than little chess.
Exactly. I know things have been dark lately, but I have some good news for you. In fact, three pieces of good news, all having to do with dogs. And the first has to do with New York area shortages. And so you've probably heard a lot about the lack of ventilators, the lack of masks and other personal protective equipment. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I have to report that according to Muddy Paws Rescue and Best Friends Animal Society, they're reporting that shelters they work with are either all out of or almost out of cats and dogs after a surge in applications of as much as tenfold in the past 2 weeks. According to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, they said its LA office saw a 70% increase in animals going into foster care, and Best Friends said many of the shelters it partners with across the U.S. report the same phenomenon. So they're running out of animals to give you, which is just great news, because what better thing to get you through this than a cat or a dog?
You gotta breed them. Let's just start breeding them. That's what we have to do. Supply and demand, capitalism, cat pistolism? I don't know.
We need the Defense Production Act to be levied against corgis. I don't know. We need more of them and fast. GE needs to breed pups.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. And if you run out of cats and dogs, you can always start your own tiger zoo. just watch the documentary Tiger King. It's essentially a how-to on how to create a giant empire of, you know, you're the king of beasts.
Exactly. I haven't seen the end, but it seems like a pretty good business model. It seems
everything, even though spoiler alert, the first episode tells you how it ends.
I only watched the middle episodes, actually, and the end. And I didn't see the beginning. Anyway, there's a little bit of potential bad news to this first bit of good news, though, and that is that rescue organizations worry they'll soon see the opposite problem, a rise in surrendered pets as many Americans lose their jobs. Shelters may be asked to take in more animals than they have room to house. But hopefully these two problems might cancel out, and the people who have at least some resources and need some sort of emotional support, stress relief, animals have all these documented things. Maybe we'll do more on that in another video, could help for people who can no longer care for their animals. But having an animal is definitely a good thing. I advocate for it.
Yeah. Jason Carter got a dog, he told me yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it's adorable and lovable.
I want to see it.
No. Oh, sorry, okay. I can't betray his trust like that.
Bit of good news number two having to do with dogs, that is that there is no evidence that a dog, cat, or any pet can transmit COVID-19. This is according to the WHO. If you are worried, because there are some coronaviruses actually that can affect dogs specifically, and it's not impossible that this one could, but so far there is no documented evidence of that. So while you have to keep yourself safe, at least one less thing to worry about, your animal companion is probably going to be okay during this.
Goes counter to some of the things I was reading today, John, which are cats are particularly susceptible to COVID. So you seem to be pretty much of a dog person and almost a cat genocider.
Well, according to the WHO, they have no evidence of cats
transmit,
either.
Not contract.
Okay. Well, just it's a bit of good news, but yes, yes. Do more research. Thank you, Brian.
I would like to say, and now that I brought everyone down.
No, it's not down. It's context. It's important.
I know, but I would just say do some research before you go out there thinking your cat's going to be safe from your bad decisions. Though then again, the cats do eat the people after they die. So I guess it's like 1-2. My favorite happy story out of all of this, before we go back to adorable pictures of dogs wearing hats, and that's a tease to keep people around, is that in England, there is a medical fetish company that sells masks and scrubs and actual medical equipment, and the NHS is under supplied. And so this, I think it's called MedFet UK, mm-hmm. is actually donating a bunch of the N95 masks from their fetish collection to people at the NHS so that they can be protected from COVID.
That's a good call.
Their skin staplers are still available, and they're selling those, because I don't think it's just the like sexy nurse outfit. I think it's people who actually like to get like their skin stapled for the pain of it. Anyways, they are doing nice things, and it's amazing that they are donating from a fetish company.
Exactly, exactly. We did a top 10 list, by the way, of people who are helping to make this a little bit easier. Maybe that should have belonged there. Maybe we'll do an updated one.
I haven't broken yet, John. I'm not a psychic.
Okay, well, we'll do a second.
I already gave you the cat thing. I can't keep saving the show.
Okay, no, I need you to. That's what you're here for. But if you can't save it, how about some suggestions for ways to get by these long days of lockdown? You're on social media anyway. Why not follow some dogs? And so here are some suggestions of awesome dog Instagram accounts to follow. One is one that I go to literally every day, and that is The Geronimo Show. It is this little Australian shepherd that is the cutest, most emotive animal ever. Go to The Geronimo Show. Super adorable. Great photography. I love it. I love it so much. Okay. Number two is...
I have no comment about that.
Well, what about this? Aspen the Mountain Pup, who is one of the most dignified, classic dogs I've ever seen and knows how to wear a hat in a time when the answer, if most people ask, should I start wearing hats? Usually the answer is no. But if you're Aspen the Mountain Pup, yes.
Never stop wearing hats.
Always be wearing hats. Number three, this one is chosen to honor the memory of Sam Shocker, who is alive. She's just not here. That is the account Boop My Nose, which is...
Weird way to say that, John.
She likes to boop things, remember?
I know, but honor the memory.
Because she used to be here and she's not anymore. She's alive. She's doing great.
Don't say anything that after... You just were like a trending Twitter topic there now. You're like, Sam Shocker's trending. And everyone's like, oh my God, why? Is she dead? Is she dead? No, she just had a baby. Little good. Baby Miles.
Yes.
Is doing also well adorable. There in Colorado.
Anyway, Boop My Nose is an account not of one dog, but of the close-up shots of noses for many dogs. And so, you know, follow that every day. New dog nose. Who doesn't want that?
Mm-hmm.
And then Brett seems oddly not interested. I'm basically choosing these because I can imagine these being on Happy Half Hour, especially this one. This is
Stop
Dogs
producing
in...
my show and produce your own goddamn show, John.
Dogs in Food are awesome photoshops of dogs being integrated into food products. I love it.
So that's a fetish site.
I don't think you're supposed to get anything out of it in that way. But hey, if it makes it a little bit easier to deal with this isolation, especially if it stretches on, go to Dogs and Food. Go watch some dog
follow
boots.
Follow HHH on TYT. Alex has been curating quite an amazing amount of great things like this. You just need to go to it. HHH on TYT. Do it now.
Do it.
Do it now. And then comment, because I can see the comments, because John and I are sharing the stream. John's sharing a stream with me. So I need to see that you have confirmed that you followed HHH on TYT.
It's Friday. That means it's time to take out the trash. This is Garbage People. Okay, Brett. You, I don't think, have a can, but I have a can. Okay. Yeah. So we have both selected people that we believe exemplify being garbage this week. And we didn't decide who was going to go first. So why don't you go first this time?
Oh, I see your rundown, Trey. Okay. So my garbage person is Kenneth Copeland, evangelist extraordinaire. You've got to love Dr. Kenneth Copeland. I think he calls himself Dr. Kenneth Copeland because it's a made up doctorate he has in nothingness. I really should thank him because he declared coronavirus dead. We have a small clip of it. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to that clip.
You will destroy through COVID-19. No more!
No more. No more.
It
no more
is finished.
It
is over.
It's beginning to draw up and shrivel and disintegrate.
Yes. At exactly 12 noon on the 29th day of March.
Oh my God. So yeah, the audio was a little bit low there, but I love that they've pinpointed the time of death for it, that they've described how it died. It shriveled up and then disintegrated.
It's so ridiculous, but like that, but they're, I was going to say that that's a great feat, but then I thought about it for a second and realized that that is absolute nonsense.
You think?
I think so. All the evangelists are trying to say, listen, don't listen to scientists. You need to listen to me. I will protect you through faith against coronavirus, instead of having people like wash their hands. There was another guy who said like Purell is for pansies in Europe, who are evangelicals in Europe and ministers who are saying you should wash your hands and cancel services. There was another guy who planned an Easter Woodstock type blowout of people coming together. But it's like, it just reminds me of the old joke where it's like, there's a guy, he's drowning, and he's like, oh, God will save me. And then like a log floats by. He's like, no, God will save me. A boat comes by. No, God will save me. Like a helicopter comes down to pick him up. No, God will save me. And then he dies and goes to heaven. And God said, and he says, God, why did you let me drown? And God's like, what are you talking about? I sent you a log, a boat, and a helicopter. And that's what all these people are doing. And it's another one of those like quicksand type events where you want to struggle with it. You want to think it through. You want to communicate to these people and like engage them. But the more you do, the more you realize you've already lost. Like, people need to follow the advice of scientists. You can still love the Lord and wash your hands.
Yeah. If he didn't give us Purell, who did? That would be my question. Intelligent design of hand sanitizer.
Well, a bunch of distilleries are now making hand sanitizers, so they're giving us hand sanitizer.
I guess Tito's gave us hand sanitizer, perhaps. Okay, that was a great garbage person. I have another. I want to quickly say, and I was bringing up my notes for garbage people. That's what broke the entire thing. So I did consider a lot of different people. There were a lot of suggestions. Many people said either Whoopi Goldberg specifically or the women of The View for this week. And I would have chosen that, but we talked about it at length yesterday with Benjamin Dixon. So it just, I don't want to do the same thing. There were other people who were definitely asking for it. Jared Kushner yesterday, I thought was the worst, but I'm going to have to go with this individual. So this is, this is Brian Kemp, governor of Georgia, is going to go in the trash so that I can put this down because it's unmanageable. This is actually a suggestion from a candidate, Nabila Islam, who's a friend of the show. And so I want to show you why he deserves that position in the trash. So take a little listen to this and realize that this was in the last 48 hours.
What we've been telling people from directives from the CDC for weeks now, that if you start feeling bad, stay home. Those individuals could have been infecting people before they ever felt bad. Well, we didn't know that until the last 24 hours. And as Dr. Toomey told me, she goes, this is a game changer for us.
I'm really kind of stunned by what he said, because we've known that for quite some time, haven't we?
Anderson, this is inexcusable. I mean, it's just inexcusable.
He said, we've just found out about it. No. I mean, I read an article from January. New coronavirus can cause infections with no symptoms and sicken otherwise healthy people, studies show. He just found out about it yesterday. He's in charge of the statewide response to it, and he doesn't have the sort of knowledge that, like Sanjay Gupta was saying, his kid knows about it.
Yeah, it's these people are in charge of the country. This guy ran on a platform not too dissimilar from all the things he's doing wrong. Like, this is a guy who's like, I got a truck so I can round up illegals. I got a gun so I can. And this is a guy who, in one of his commercials when he was running against Stacey Abrams, had a shotgun across his lap, pointed at a 12-year-old at a 16-year-old kid saying, "Don't hunt my daughters or I'll hunt you." And it is that kind of proud defiance of rational thought and any kind of intellectual curiosity that unfortunately is your responsibility, buddy, when you're the governor of an entire state. People put their faith in you, but that is wildly bad decision.
Yeah, I like imagine how much better off the people would be if Stacey Abrams had not had the election likely stolen from her back in 2018. Like because
he was the Secretary of State at the time.
Exactly.
Got rid of a lot of votes.
Exactly. Everyone, take a look at our videos from the time. Civita says, this segment should be the whole show. I mean, it kind of is, honestly. We don't always take out the trash can, but it generally is what the show's about. He's in charge, and he's... like, is he even being honest there? Did he find out about it yesterday? He doesn't have a doctor who's talking to him. Like, I don't even know that I believe that at this
point. It's a bad way to BS. It's not believable BS.
Yeah, the combination of dishonesty and just ignorance when people's lives are on the line, like it's so frustrating that these people were given power and that the people who voted for them either thought that they would be a good choice if it came to some sort of emergency, or didn't think about the likely cost of these people holding positions of authority. But that guy is too stupid to have power. You can't put it any other way.
Yep. It's very, very frustrating. Like, the one thing you could possibly deny is when people... like, I've seen people... when they're sick, the thing you know about that is that people are contagious before they show symptoms. And maybe later they say, "I'm no longer contagious," but they still look sick. Like, maybe that? But still, man... This is an admission of failure. Unfortunately, there's like this weird thing people have where if someone comes forward and says, like, "Listen, I just didn't know, but I'm saying this to your face that I didn't know, and so we're now making adjustments," there is this instinct that it's like, all right, I can't be mad anymore. But no, you should still be mad. He is a failure, and he killed people.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're watching this, go to the channel and my last interview with Nabila Islam. Like, she was talking at that time, one of the topics we talked about was how Georgia was failing in its response, that really nothing was being done. And when we were filming that, apparently Kemp was sitting in the governor's mansion just thinking, "Well, I got this locked down. I don't need to learn anything new about it. Like, we just got to make sure that people who aren't like their skin isn't dripping off their bones. Those are the only people that can really transmit it. We should be safe at this point." Like, the response was driven by either an unwillingness to, you know, make Trump look bad by taking it seriously. He hates that. That's why he probably pushed for that captain to lose his job. And a complete lack of knowledge about it. We're surrounded by idiots. And we give them power. I'm happy now to be joined once again on the Damage Report by a candidate running for Senate in the state of Delaware, Jess Scurrain. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me, Don.
Glad to have you here. And honestly, these days, excited to talk to any candidate that is having to transition over to sort of the new situation. I'm curious for you how things have changed over the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, we were a predominantly field-driven campaign. We were really focused on how many voters can we reach out and touch, because in a state like Delaware, you can actually reach as many voters as you need, because we are a small state. Top to bottom, you know, it's about 2 hours to cross the entire state. So we were really focused on doing that. We were focused on being the campaign in the state's history that knocked on the most doors in history. Obviously, that has shifted dramatically. We pulled our team out of the field, I think something like March 12th, even earlier maybe, because we were just looking at what was happening across the globe and recognizing that it was coming here, recognizing that a lot of our volunteers don't have health insurance themselves. A lot of the neighborhoods that we were canvassing in have people that don't have health insurance. And the last thing that we wanted to be was a vector of disease, frankly. So we have shifted entirely to being a digital and phone-based campaign, which is quite a change, obviously, but we are still trying to have those person-to-person conversations that were so important to our campaign in the beginning on the phone. So we have taken all of our volunteers and we are now shifting them to phone banking shifts every single day between noon and 8:30 p.m., trying to dial more than 10,000 dials every single week so that we are still hitting our field numbers that are incredibly important to getting our message out and getting my name out and the campaign in front of voters. However, those conversations are starting from a place of how can we make sure that we are checking in on voters, not just hitting the phone and starting to hit them with a platform message. It is much more about, are you doing okay? What do you need? And we have even had some volunteers doing resource runs for voters who are in trouble and need help. Oh, wow. We have we've been delivering food and supplies to people who've needed them. We have resources that we've compiled for all of our volunteers so that they have those on the tip of their fingers too, so that when they're talking to someone, they can get them the information that they need. And only once that person tells us that, no, I'm okay, my family's okay, is that when we actually transition to the conversation about the campaign, because we are really prioritizing the needs and the health of the people in our state right now.
That certainly seems reasonable. I'm curious, once it does transition to talking about your platform, have you found any difference in either what sorts of policies your potential constituents are interested in? Are they expecting something more or different out of government than they might have a month ago? Has there been a noticeable change?
You know, healthcare was always top of mind for people, and I think that it's only more so now. I think people that maybe were hesitant about the conversation around Medicare for All are open to it now, which is interesting. I had a woman just a couple weeks ago tell me, you know, I was kind of scared of Medicare for All. It scares me, but can we talk about it? What would be different? What would it mean for me? Because she was coming from the perspective of saying, you know, I have good insurance, which you hear from people sometimes. But as soon as you probe around that idea of good insurance, she started telling me about how her husband is living with kidney failure. And she's constantly needing to call the insurance company, make sure he gets the drugs that he needs covered, make sure that he gets the treatment he needs covered so that he can stay alive. So once you start having that conversation with people, they do seem more open to the fact that our system is broken. Even when they think that they're doing okay in it, they're starting to recognize the cracks. And I think it's made it easier to have those conversations. I think housing and wages are also really top of mind for people right now. There are a lot of people who, when April 1st came, were not sure how they were going to pay their rent or pay their mortgage. And that really creates some instability in their lives at the time when they need that the least. So our conversations have really centered around those topics.
Well, and so you've been talking about some of the individual things that you and your team are doing for your potential constituents, but you also called on the governor recently to make some major changes. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I just mentioned the fact that people were telling us they're concerned about their ability to pay rent, their ability to pay a mortgage. So our campaign has called on the governor to put a moratorium on payments for rent, mortgages, loans, these big ticket items that we know people just don't have the money for right now. What we have in Delaware, which is a great first step, is that people cannot be evicted or foreclosed on during these. We're in a state of emergency. So during the state of emergency, those proceedings can't be pushed forward against anyone. That's a great first step. However, 30 days after that state of emergency is lifted, those proceedings can start again. So if you are someone who's lost your job and is not receiving as much compensation as you did from unemployment, and you're still not able to make those payments, 30 days after the state of emergency is over, your landlord, your bank, whoever that may be, can bring proceedings against you. So we are calling on the governor to use the powers that he has given under this state of emergency to essentially make rent zero, to say that the tenant obligations in our code do not require them to make payments during this time, because we know so many people are not going to be able to do it. And why would we create a financial crisis and a housing crisis as a result of what we already have in a public health crisis?
You know, we were talking earlier about some of the ways that your campaign has had to change, that virtually everyone's campaign has had to change, especially in areas that have lockdowns. You know, I'm curious from your point of view. I mean, so let's say hypothetically, you have to mostly campaign digitally. Theoretically, you know, Chris Coons has to as well, but he has name recognition. Generally, incumbents are going to have more money. Do you think that overall, the way that things are right now and are likely to be for a few months, is that going to make it harder for primary challengers in your race, perhaps in races across the country?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern, right? It's already a challenging thing to take on a 10-year incumbent and try to build up recognition for both yourself and the platform you're running on. He has the benefit of getting quite a bit of earned media as well by seemingly being able to go on cable news and be publicized there. But I think we are in a position where people are recognizing that the platform that we are running on is what we need in a moment like this, that we don't we are getting from our government right now these pieces. They're on like the fourth stimulus bill, rather than saying, what is the big, bold action that we can take to protect people? And I think people are recognizing that had we had the things that I'm calling for in my platform, universal healthcare, homes guarantees, better wages and democracy in the workplace, that people wouldn't be in such a crisis right now. So I do think there is an opportunity to have that conversation with people as if we can get in front of them as best we can and break through there, because these are the things that people are recognizing would be better for our country if we had them already. Mm-hmm. We would not be trying to legislate through a crisis to get them now.
I certainly agree. And, you know, now we do have a couple of bills that have passed, and they're talking about follow-up legislation. You know, what do you think about, first of all, Chris Coons, who you're going to be going up against? He did support the last big bill. What do you think about what has been included and what has not been included in the recovery bills that have passed so far?
Yeah, I think that we didn't have what people are calling for, which is a people's bailout. We had quite a bit of money that is going toward the Fed to be leveraged into trillions of dollars that are going to corporations. So we, again, in times of crisis, have a stimulus that is going to the very top rather than to the people who need it the most. We were in a position where people were losing their jobs. What we should have been doing is focus on a bill that either protects those jobs and protects those people's pay. Same thing with people losing their homes. We should be legislating to make sure that people don't lose their homes through this moment. So I'm really disappointed in the provisions for individuals as opposed to the provisions, again, for corporations and the most powerful people in the country. And my opponent came out after, you're right, supporting that bill. However, was then in our local newspaper immediately talking about how he's concerned about the debt and the deficit that a bill like this creates. And the last thing I think we need to see right now is Democratic leadership beginning to talk the talk of austerity while we are still have people in crisis mode.
Well, as I'm sure you're aware, the historical cycle is you have a Republican president, they give trillions of dollars to the rich, then the debt and the deficit goes up, and then it's time for Democrats to take control and start talking about getting those numbers down. It looks like they're prepping for it in advance of November.
Telling us we have to tighten our belts.
Exactly. And you're saying, you know, that the legislation needs to address the needs of individuals more. If after they prioritized corporations and the wealthy, generally their interests, if now we're supposed to be worried about debt, are they going to be hesitant to do another big bill that directly addresses the needs of individuals? I think that that's a very valid concern to have right now.
Right. Why would you be starting that conversation when you know that we haven't done enough to help people? When we have 10 million people that just lost their jobs? And the answer for healthcare for them from my opponent is open up ACA enrollment. Well, we have one insurer in our marketplace in Delaware, one company, there's no competition there. The lowest monthly payment plan that you can get comes with an $8,000 deductible. So if you were in a position where you just lost your employer health insurance and you're scared and you're worried and you need to get something right now, you're going to get a plan that you still aren't able to afford to use if you do get sick. So these are the types of answers that I see my opponent putting forward, and they don't match the scale of the crisis that we are facing. They are going to leave people expending their money to give to a private insurer and still be in a place where they can't get the care they need if they do get sick.
So as of right now, the primary is scheduled for September 15th. Do you expect that that will be the day that there will be an election? And what do you think that the state and the country should be doing to prepare for the possibility that we might still be dealing with coronavirus when your primary or when the general election rolls around?
Yeah, I'm happy to see that for our presidential primary, which was in April, now has been moved to June. We are moving to a essentially no excuse absentee ballot system. So you can use coronavirus as the reason to get an absentee ballot. I think I would like to see us go even further and say that everyone gets mailed a ballot and that they are able to vote by mail in our elections, because I think that we don't know that things are going to be safer come September, and we should be doing everything now to be prepared so that we don't run into the need to scramble, so that we don't need to create confusion right before an election, which I personally believe would lead to voter suppression. And we should be preparing ourselves and putting a plan in place right now that says, let's get ballots to every single person so that they are in a place to exercise their right to vote without having to worry about their health or their safety.
And where can people find out more about your platform?
Yeah, so you can visit our website at justfordelaware.com. And we're also Just for Delaware on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all the spots.
Even on TikTok. Okay, I don't even have a presence there. Jessica Rain, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, John. Have a great day. Stay safe.
You too. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.